And I just hit the record button. This is Gage checking in.
Eddie checking in.
And this is Two Boys in a Podcast.
Nice. So we're doing things a little bit differently. We actually have a subject list that we're going to be going through. And in today's episode, we're going to be reintroducing ourselves because I feel like we've cheated our listeners and kind of hopscotched around who we are. And I feel like you guys definitely should have a good background of who we are. And mainly on this episode, after introducing ourselves, we're going to be talking about accountability and, you know, what that entails in our lives and what we're going to do in the future about that.
Yeah, and how, for the most part, I specifically am not that accountable, and that we definitely need to be working on it.
Yeah, definitely. I think everybody in general can take accountability a little bit more serious. But yeah, but more on that later. But anyways, do you want to start on who you are?
Yes. So, I'm Gage. Gage Morrow.
Actually, let's do it this way, but not to cut you off, sorry. Let's do kind of a quick lineage of who you are, where you were born, you know, how we have gotten to this room today.
Got it. And we'll, I'm not editing this out, by the way.
That's
keeping
fine.
This in. Keeping the mistakes. Roll with it. Okay, so then cool, yeah. Gage Morrow. I was born in Bay State Hospital in Springfield, Massachusetts. When my parents split, I moved to Connecticut for most of my life leading up to adolescence and young adulthood. I graduated from a magnet school, a math and science magnet school in Hartford, Connecticut. Then went to college at a small liberal arts school called Wheelock College in the Fenway area of Boston until just recently, where our school has been dissolved and bought up by Boston University. So I'm currently a soon-to-graduate Boston University undergraduate who's graduating in December for film and television major, and that's what brings us here. I work at a particular coffee shop where I met Eddie.
And that's all?
Oh, I mean, we were going to shade in our past a little bit more, but, you know, those are the big chunks.
The big chunks?
Born in Springfield, raised in CT, went to college in Boston. That's where I met Eddie.
Yep. So, for me, I'm Edwin Serrata. Everybody just calls me Eddie. And I was born in New York, Manhattan City Hospital, and lived there up until I was 5, where my parents moved to Connecticut. That's where I pretty much was raised from my adolescence up until I graduated high school. I went to, for high school, I went to University High School of Science and Engineering. It was a very big tech school, really cool. After that, I did not want to stay home, did not like Connecticut at all, and went to the New England Institute of Art, which was located in Brookline, Massachusetts, graduated with a degree in interior design, and then I decided to go back for my grad for interior design at Boston Architectural College after my undergrad school closed down, and then came to a realization that college wasn't the best choice for me, so I made a conscious decision to drop out and kind of really work on myself. And I am also working at a particular coffee shop with Gage, and that's how I met him as well. And then also, I have a internship over in Everett where I do upholstering.
That's very strange how much we have in common. Yeah. Both trying to flee CT and our schools don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Our alma maters don't exist, and we both are from Connecticut and never wanted to stay there, like most people.
What I tell customers now is people who live in Connecticut just live there so they can leave eventually.
Yeah, and my town that I grew up in, Windsor Locks, Connecticut, was the easiest town to get away from. We had an Amtrak station, an airport, and a highway that passes right through the middle of our town. Plus, we're on the river, so if you really dire straits, you can hop in a barrel and just float downstream, float down the good old CT River.
Yep.
But
I mean, that was the same thing in Hartford too. Well, I was raised and grew up in Hartford, and so trust me, when you live in Hartford, there's just nothing to do.
Yeah.
There's nothing to do, and I was pretty fortunate, you know, in my late teens where I found like a good friends circle. that we all kind of like doing the same thing. So a big part of that for me was longboarding. Mm. And I used to...
Ooh, West Hartford?
No, just in Hartford, essentially. Oh,
okay.
And so me and my friends, we just, you know, meet up on the weekends and be like, yo, we all longboarding. And then that's what we do. We just longboard all over the, you know, the city. Find the best roads to fucking dive bomb hills.
Yes,
and,
dude.
Dude, I have some good stories about me fucking ripping the skin off my elbows and just getting in the fucking worst accidents. But
I had a friend
that was part of the grind of, you know, longboarding and shit.
I had a friend who lived up on West Hartford. So you could look down into... So for those who aren't from the Northeast or don't know the Connecticut area, you know, Long Island is, as I like to call it, glacier poop, because a glacier carved through the Northeast and deposited all of what it picked up right out into the ocean as it melted. And so we have the Connecticut Valley, you know, what is it called? Is it called Connecticut Valley?
I guess.
Or the Pioneer Valley.
I've never heard of
it. You call it different things, that. Or like the... the Connecticut Valley. I guess maybe I'm just talking out of my ass. There's a valley that cuts through the Northeast, you know, called the Pioneer Valley in Mass, and in Connecticut it's called something different. But West Hartford is just at the top of that and looks down into Hartford. And my friend had, there's giant, big suburban winding roads over there near the reservoir and stuff, and you logboard for like days up there. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can see the appeal, especially when in Hartford nobody is doing anything and you gotta do something. Nothing, you gotta be able to get away fast too. Gotta skiddly do out of there.
Just fucking skip and dive.
Hartford is an interesting place because one block you're in like destitution and the other block you're rolling with like big bankers and insurance execs and
because downtown Hartford has, that's where a lot of Connecticut Gas and Lighting is there. All the like major insurance company, like ING.
We are the insurance capital of the world.
We are, man.
Hartford is. That's why it's the Hartford. I mean, that's one of the big insurance companies.
And on Urban Dictionary, there's a definition for Hartford.
Really?
Yeah. It's, I gotta look it up, but the key note of it is, you know, a city where, a lot of money is made, but at 5 p.m. all the insurance people leave and mm-hmm. it just becomes a destitute
and they place. Go to like Groton or Norwich or they sometime, you know, or people like fucking just, old Lyme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because after 5, dude, just that downtown Hartford just empties out. It's just
dense.
There's just nothing at all. And they try to revitalize it a little bit more over the years.
I just heard there recently, to pick up my little brother. He used to go to Prince Tech. So I went to go pick him up recently. They're trying to gentrify downtown again, but it's just spreading the circle a little bit more, but there's still that like...
Yeah, it's definitive area. Anybody who knows Connecticut really well, like you're in downtown Hartford. I forgot the main street that downtown consists of.
Bushnell?
But is it Bushnell? Bushnell Park is like a little farther towards Asylum Ave.
Yeah.
If you go down that route, because that's one of the main break streets.
Mm.
But if you go up into the north end, then you'll get to Albany Ave, which you get into North Hartford. Down, that's like the real bad part of Hartford. And then if you go to the south, going to the south end of Hartford, you'll get into Maple Ave. There's actually kind of three big avenues. Maple Ave, Franklin Ave, and then Weathersfield Ave. Those three consist of pretty much South Hartford. And again, you're just running into ghetto again.
I'm getting a geography lesson right now because my school was right down the street from Trinity College, which is probably one of the most expensive institutions in the Northeast. We were literally on the same street, and so I was in a micro cluster of like high-end, not even high-end, like you take a couple steps to the right and now you're in like some shady neighborhoods, and then just a couple steps, so you were in like the Goldilocks zone because we had so much security, kind of residual security from in police presence from like the college and like our own school, because we're a high school and we're a magnet school and we're also connected to
It used to be called we actually went to
the same school technically.
Yeah,
it was the same campus. What was it called?
So it used to be called HMS, Hartford Magnet Middle School, and then they got into this partnership with Trinity College because HMMS.
That's what it was.
Yeah, yeah. HMMS expanded to have a high school with it, and then they got into all these deals with Trinity College and the math and science buildings, and it just kind of, it's just like a whole big ass melting pot.
Well, so now it's different because our campus moved out to Windsor, Connecticut, and you guys' campus still in Hartford.
Yeah.
Because ours then changed to the Aerospace and School of Engineering. So all of this is going to be super confusing for anyone listening.
Yeah.
But this is basically like, we had a weird phase where like our schools were going through transitions as we left, or like whether we were there, like things get changed around a lot. Education system and like education in general, like Connecticut, it's all fed through like airplane money and elevator money. We got elevators, we got shit will take you up and then shit will take you down. Like we got elevators and airplanes and helicopters.
And
like,
if you don't do those two things, you can probably be in work for an insurance company.
Yeah, exactly. If you ain't moving up and down, like you gotta find somewhere else to go.
Yeah, yeah. But you can insure the elevators at your
But the reason that I left Connecticut is because all of the people that I went to school with pretty much would all want to go to UConn, and we even had like here. This we had
UConn
this chart
or UHart.
UHart was less popular with ours, but like the kids who couldn't go forward to go to UConn went to UHart, and because they incentivized the shit out of it for people to stay in Connecticut. Like the in-state tuition is super high, and I was looking at this chart, and it said, it was a list, it was a bar chart of all the schools. There was like Panoma College, like Boston College, Boston University, all these colleges that people had gotten into. And in the middle of the chart, it just says UConn, and it's this giant spike. Like everything else just disappears next to it. Mm-hmm. And I looked at that and I'm like, I can't stay in Connecticut. Like I already didn't like Connecticut so much, and it was really nothing to do, and I prefer the city. And I had an affinity to Boston because it was probably the closest city and something that I already knew. I spent so much time like taking trips there. And so basically my first filter for college searches was just like a school in Boston, because I knew there was a bunch of them, so I had a lot to pick
from. Oh yeah, you definitely had a lot to pick from. And the same thing for me, and it was really weird because when me and my friends were all applying to colleges, I literally only applied to UHart, and that was because our school made it a requirement that we apply to UHart, which was stupid because my high school, we were part, like we had again, we had a coalition with the University of Hartford and our school, because our campus was located right next to it, so we were allowed to take college credit classes during high school, and all we had to do is just walk over the bridge and boom, we're on the campus. So it was a requirement that you applied there. Everybody got accepted, no wonder. And then on top of that, my friends who were really smart, like our high school was really good, who were really smart, I can go into conspiracy about it, but none of the other schools that they applied for either put them on a waiting list or declined them, but UConn took them no problem. It was very weird. And then they they end up going to UConn because that's their only option. You know,
thinking that it's conspiracy to feed more tuition into UConn from these like other high schools?
Yeah, that's what I felt. But at the same time, and this is not the knock on UConn and their majors, because they are a good school. They're big, you know. I mean, also they have a very great sports team and
women's basketball in particular.
Women's and men's basketball. Their football is not that great from what I've heard. The what?
Go Huskies.
Yeah, go Huskies. But yeah, they definitely have a huge driving force in their athletics department, where it's, you know, their basketball is like number one. And, you know, we have the record to prove it, too.
Yeah. Well, so, okay, then, so out of high school, I guess from the perspective of where we are now, to the point of, like, why we're sitting in these chairs across from one another, and where we are in our stages of our life. When I left high school, I wanted to be a therapist. Psychology was kind of, like, my mom had gone to college to study psychology, and I thought it was interesting. I actually wanted to be a neurosurgeon right before I graduated, but then I kind of tempered my expectations. I was like, maybe I don't have money for medical school. So, and my grades weren't that great coming out of high school. But I wanted to be a therapist, so I went to a liberal arts school that had psychology as a major, which pretty much all of them do. But what I didn't know is that it was an education major school, and it was part of a consortium of six colleges. The six colleges part was what I was drawn to, because these It was part of a group of schools, a consortium called the Colleges of the Fenway. So Wheelock was at the very tail end, and the other tail end was Wentworth School for Engineering. And everything in between was MCPHS, Simmons College. MCPHS is Massachusetts College for Pharmaceutical Health Studies, I think. Or school, health school, maybe that's what the S is for. Simmons College, which was a nursing and also development school, but it was all females school, or as people who go to Simmons would like to say, a female-centric school, because I've been swiftly corrected by many people. Emmanuel and, what's the other one? And Mass Art, the only public art school in all of America. But I didn't know I wanted to be an artist going into college. I went for therapy, didn't realize it was an education school, didn't match up with a lot of the stuff they were studying, and realized I would be a terrible therapist because I talk too much and I'm a terrible listener. So I wanted to be a director and I wanted to make movies. And so I had already double majored as communications because I had enough credits where I could do so and they were pretty flexible. But their communications department was kind of a joke. My junior year, they had sent us an email coming into the off the summer of sophomore year. So as I was a rising junior, I got the email to say, our school is not existing anymore. We made a bunch of deals, and the person who took us was Boston University. You will be a Boston University student. More information to come. And it wasn't a question. It was an answer. It was like they were telling me and all the other students, like, you're going to go to this school for however long left you have in your degree. So I basically got this golden ticket opportunity to go to Boston University. I stayed majoring in communications, but I'm now currently only working out one semester of that because I was scheduled to graduate a semester early. Hold for stairs. So I only have one semester left. So basically, I'm right now, as you're listening to this podcast, well, as we're recording this podcast, in the very middle of my last semester in school ever, but it's a very bittersweet. It's like it's coming to the end, so I don't get to spend as much time at Boston University, but they're providing me with so many opportunities that I never even knew that I wanted. And so I want to pursue film. That's my interest now as I sit here. I want to be a writer-director, and I want to create films, television, anything that's on the moving picture format. And I want people to see it, and I want to get people's feedback, and I want to have an audience, and I want to see my stuff on the big screen, you know, these very classical dreams that haven't changed over the decades from as far back as people could fucking project movies, you know. It's it's definitely a draw. And so that's why I'm sitting here today. So where were you coming out of high school?
Where was I coming out of high school? So definitely same aspiration of not staying in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go. My mom tried to convince me to do community college, you know, go to Manchester Community College, mm-hmm. or our local ones, Capital Community College.
You think Bunker Hill's bad? Boy,
man.
Oh, mercy. Yeah.
So I very strongly said no. And I went to the New England Institute of Art. I was actually going to go to Wentworth. But yeah, for some reason, I couldn't get a loan to pay for the tuition. Only a part of financial aid was covering the entire tuition cost. And then I got a scholarship from Wentworth, but it was only one of those $10,000 merit scholarships that only apply once and doesn't reoccur every year.
I'm still listening. Sorry for the sound. Yeah. I just want to see how much.
Oh, now.
Of course she stops.
Clover stops. Clover was just licking her paws, cleaning them off. But I also applied to NEIA, just short for New England Institute of Art. And so they got me the loans that I needed to go, and you know, my financial aid package accepted everything. So I ended up going there. And from the beginning of going there to the end of graduation, the school was just on a downhill, you know, trot. And we were right when I got there, I graduated in 2012, started going there at the fall of 2012. Right when we got there, the school already lost all of its external off-campus buildings. Mm-hmm. So there were two of them, one for photography, one for interior design, were then just put into the Dana-Farber building that we that we were in. Everybody knows that is in Brookline, right off of Route 9. So we had three floors. And then by my halfway in my junior going off into my senior year, we lost the second floor. So now we only had the first in the basement. And we were just losing so many resources, and our departments were dwindling so fast. And, you know, by the end of it, all my classes consisted of one professor teaching all of our courses.
What, are you going back to, like, middle school or, like, grade school?
Where you're really. You leave one class, and then I have my half-hour break, and then I go back into a different classroom with the same professor, and
it must have been brutal for the faculty, too. Like,
it really was.
Seeing it crumble around you, and, like, your job security is, like, dwindling by the second.
Dude, and it was hard for our department. Interior design wasn't always a big department, but it always had a really good flow of students, and we were all pretty faithful to stay and stick through the entire program, mm-hmm. because it was a good program until towards the end of it, because the school, it was this dichotomy of, well, should we update curriculum even though we're going to be closing kind of soon? And so there are definitely some things that I missed out on that were in the field of interior design that I would need to definitely get out there and push myself and, you know, be a valuable team member to a firm in Boston or anywhere else. And that was just hard in general. But yeah, but then I graduated in 2012. After that, I was kind of just looking for jobs left and right in my field in particular. And I definitely knew I did not have the adequate set of skills to, you know, be hired anywhere. And before I ended up getting my first semi-in-the-field job at Jonathan Adler, I had an internship that was unpaid for during school, and it was a showroom in the Boston Design Center. We call it Studio 534, and all they do is they mainly sell fabric, and so they have really large fabric wings throughout the entire studio, and they also sell furniture, and they have, like, really cool niche designers that they display some of their works. But they mainly focused on fabrics and furniture fabrics that they sold, also wall coverings. And at the end, my supervisor, at the end of the internship, we would have a sit down and then discuss, well, what do you plan to do on, you know, in the future with your degree? And literally through my entire, you know, undergrad career, I did not know what I wanted to do with interior design. You know, there was commercial design, residential, medical, you know, just non-profit things you can do, but I just never could really pinpoint on something I wanted to do. And now that I look back at it, it was really kind of more bullshitty of an answer that I give. You know, I want to make design that makes people happy. And I think that's something all designers want to do. Nobody wants to design a house and make you feel shitty in it.
Like, it's a haunted house.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, yeah, we built this on top of an Indian reservation. Have fun with that. Yeah. So in that meeting, I was telling my supervisor, I was like, you know, I'm really interested in the aspect of furniture and furniture design. And she had, we're actually sitting next to a chair designed by Le Corbusier. And I was like, yeah, I just, like, love the form of this and how it looks, and you know all these, like, little details that kind of just combine into one cohesive piece of furniture. And I really didn't put much mind into it after that meeting, but then when I decided to go back for my grad and get a master's in interior design, Clover stretching, she's waking up,
clicking and clacking and licking, yeah. Smacking,
trying to get our attention now. But yeah, but once I went back to grad school at the Boston Architectural College, which is on Newbury Street, it's that very big, brutalist concrete building that's at you would say at the tail end of Newbury Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, I decided to go there. And then I took an online course on post-World War II furniture making. And then that just, like, opened my eyes and just opened my world up to furniture design and the importance of, you know, introducing furniture into the mass market and into consumerism in America, and just, you know, all these designers and their impact and what they wanted to do with furniture design. And I had more of a connection in terms of that aspect of design than I did with any other form of interior design or design of that fact. So after that class, I was still in, still, you know, going through my program, and I knew I wasn't where I wanted to be because I just, my heart wasn't in it anymore. In terms of, you know, being in design school to design spaces, what I really wanted to do was design furniture. And unfortunately at the BAC, great school, you know, I'm not gonna hit them down, but they had the resources available for anybody who was interested to pursue furniture design. They had no curriculum that supported furniture design. Mm. So even though that's what I wanted to do, I couldn't, I would have to do that on my own free time, which was very little because their curriculum over there is pretty intense and you just don't have a lot of time to do anything else. So then I had to also get an internship because that was part of our curriculum program, is to be in an internship, you know, to get your credits to graduate. So I made a conscious decision to take a semester off and then find an internship, which I ended up finding. I started to do upholstery and I was learning how to upholster, and then I found an internship over in Everett where they're called McLaughlin Upholstery, where they've been doing upholstery since 1889, and they've been open ever since. And I just kind of started falling in love with the craft of it all, you know, the Clover swinging her tail over the mic, just the craft of it, and just really understanding, you know, the difference between good design in furniture and bad design in furniture, and how you can spot, you know, a mass line product versus a handmade piece of furniture. And then I did that in the April this year of April of 2018, and then by June I really understand I was not going to go back to grad school. Mm. And my mentor Kevin, I had a really, like, kind of heart-to-heart talk with him about it, and he was like, hey, so, like, when are you going to go back to school? And I was like, I don't think I'm going to go back to school at all, Kevin. And he had a really concerned look on his face. He was like, oh, my God, like, what's going on? But I explained to him, I was like, you know, I've learned more here in the few months that I have, you know, working under you guys, than I have going to school, you know, at the BAC. So, and then it clicked in his head that he's like, oh, I understand, you know, you'd rather be here because my heart is definitely in reupholstering and understanding the craft of what it takes to make an actual furniture piece than just studying about, you know, how they make furniture. I'd rather be in the weeds getting to learn how to make furniture than just read a book on how to make furniture.
Yeah.
So yeah. So that's now I feel happier that I finally found something that not only that I feel like I can get better at, but something that I don't get sick of when I go to it. And this is just the beginning too, which is super exciting because I know this is going to be a long journey and I'm in it for the long haul, but I'm definitely happy that I get to be somewhere where I know I'm going to be growing every time I go into my internship. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited. Very sorry, happy. It's just like there's so many effects that Chloe's making.
I know, right?
Background. It's like
wakes up, ominous. Stretches.
We got like a stereo. Oh, sorry, we peaked a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm going to tap down the recording just a little bit. I'm going to tap down like 80. And I can crank it back up again. Sorry. I saw the little flicker. When you see this flickering light, it means we're peaking, so I try to keep it a little bit a touch below that. Huh. You just get like a further... When we get podcast mics, when we in it,
yeah.
When we actually have studio quality headphones, or studio quality mics. No, but that's great, and I guess it's at this point, and speaking of journey, it's a good transition to probably talk about the intentions... Excuse me. The intentions behind the podcast in general. We kind of started it as a... like an impulse, like, yeah, let's make a podcast, because we absolutely love podcasts. Joe Rogan, Gary Vee, for you, like, Impact Theory,
Jocko Willink, Short Story Long, Trace Evidence.
Me, Dynamic Banter, and Chris D'Elia's Congratulations Pod, Your Mom's House with Tom Segura, yeah.
Me, my brother and I.
Yeah.
All those. We
This American Life.
A Slow Burn.
Planet Money. Yeah, so I love listening to podcasts. We love listening to podcasts, and it's something that we are fascinated by as a platform, and I guess we wanted to kind of carve out our own little space on Spotify and iTunes and all these different platforms just for a little slice. But the intentions behind this primarily is to document our experiences, our journey moving forward in each section of our life. So Eddie with his reupholstering and his journey towards, you know, design and creating and making these pieces and fixing up these pieces and restoring these pieces. And for myself, filmmaking in general, whatever. And we are completely different people when we approach our work. I would say, you know, to be frank, Eddie is a lot more dedicated to his work and is a lot further along in his journey than I am. Eddie's also a little older than me. And we're also, you know, even though we come from Connecticut and our alma maters don't exist anymore, you know, we do have a lot that's not in common.
I think that's definitely a chip, though, that we both hold, is that, you know, well, for you is a little different because your school got dissolved and eaten by a bigger, more well-reputed, you know, university, Boston University. So I feel like when you tell people, it's like, oh, where you went to school? Boston University. People are gonna be like, oh, like, that's awesome. But when I tell and explain to people that I went to NEIA, they were like, what is that? I was like, New England Institute of Art. It was like, oh, where was that at? In Brookline. It was like, doesn't matter, because they don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, okay.
And not to play who had it worse Olympics when it comes to schools.
Yeah.
But I think, and I'm gonna go back on track for a second, but I guess I'm gonna try to talk about this in future episodes. An interesting experience, and I guess accountability has a lot to do with this, which we'll talk about, but the dramatic shift in culture from going somewhere for 3 whole years and then only having a semester to catch up. And it's kind of embarrassing in some ways because you're in these classes, these higher level classes. I had to petition to take higher level classes because I was basically like, look, I got only one semester left. Don't put me in just basic classes or that and don't treat me like I'm freshman, because I spent 3 years at another school, even though if the school is far less, you know, your school is far superior in what you do. I want to get to that level. So I can't expect to graduate a senior if I'm taking middling classes. So it just kind of sucks because you kind of have to explain your ignorance in a lot of situations.
Mm.
And then people are like, oh, you know, why don't you get this? But you're, you know, how many years have you been here? And everyone's kind of gotten accustomed to their little world. And then I come in fucking loud as shit with like tie-dye shirts and they're like, who is this guy? And I'm like, yeah, I'm a Wheelock student. And they have one of two reactions. It's either of pity, of like, oh, okay, like we're some kind of like collegiate refugees, or like kind of disdain, because we pay because of the deal that we've struck when we got dissolved, we pay the original tuition. But I'm just trying to embrace this on the personal note of this. Part of them that I can't complain about is I'm just trying to take advantage of this one semester that I have. But this podcast is meant to get feedback from other people, and also so we can reach out, because this is something I think we feel most comfortable with. I'm not particularly the best at social media, but Eddie is repping hard for his internship. If you'd like to share.
Oh, yeah. So this is what I'm telling you, man. So over at my internship at McLaughlin and Upholstery, I started there first. So they were actually, I'll premise this a little bit. So when I got there, right, they were just starting to update who they were as a company because, you know, not to talk badly, they're great, amazing people, but they're old. And with that, there comes some evidence of where they are in the times. And one big thing was they weren't on social media. They had a website. It was up and running. They actually did a big overhaul when I got there. So it was updated. It looked better. It looked fresh. But the thing was, they were missing a huge aspect and a huge opportunity, which was having a presence on Instagram, Facebook, just really just to keep it simple, Instagram and Facebook. Those are the two biggest things that they were missing out. Clover's drinking water now. They were missing out on. And so when I mentioned it to them, they literally looked at me like I had three heads, because they were like, what are you talking about? Like, why would you mention these things? So when I presented to them that they should get an Instagram and a Facebook right away, they were like, well, we don't even know how to run one. So I was like, all right, then I took it upon myself to create one for them.
Accountability.
Yeah, you know, I took that on there, because not only that they needed the help, I wanted to show the value that I could bring into them to you know, make that difference for them. And because they also didn't believe it either. They didn't believe that like social media had that big of an impact on their business. But like now, you know, jump forward three, 4 months where you know, we're developing a better following. We're almost at 400 followers, which I'm very proud of myself, even though that might sound slow to some people. I'm super proud of the fact that
I'm proud of you, dude.
I, by myself, was able to start there on Instagram and have built up a follower base. And it's getting better each day, because, and this is why I'm super excited. And I tell Katie, who's who pretty much runs all the paperwork there, I was like, Katie, and she's also the youngest person in second to, I think, Kevin, who's the owner. I was like, Katie, I can't wait for the day when you get a new client and they said, yeah, I saw you guys on Instagram. I'm literally waiting for the day for that to happen.
Yeah, for sure. And it's
not, and it's just around the corner. It really is around the corner.
Because that kind of growth's one, even if it's like one out of 1,000, once you hit 1,000, that means you're going to get one person who reaches out and wants to work, or I get some work from you guys.
And because also we are redistributing our newest catalogs too. So I just put on Instagram that was like, hey, you guys don't have our catalog? Just ask us. And literally in the comment section, somebody was like, hey, I have a custom bed I want made. Like, how do I? I don't think he's contacted us yet, but I was like, there it is. There it is. Like, you see, I'm telling you guys.
Do you guys have, you have a link in the bio for like the website?
Yeah. So you guys can follow me on my Instagram, Sir Fern, at Sir Fern, SERFURN. That's my personal Instagram. And then on my info, on my bio page, I think I have a link to the other Instagram that I have. If not, then I can,
well, what's the Instagram for the McLaughlin?
Oh, McLaughlin, it's at McLaughlin Upholstery. Just one word.
Spell that out.
You're telling me how to spell?
No, I'm asking you to spell it, because McLaughlin, maybe they think it's MC, and maybe they think it's MAC, maybe they think it's an F.
You're making me spell my day off. It's McLaughlin at McLaughlin Upholstery.
Correct.
Correct.
Sits down next to the middle schoolers from spelling bee. Well, no, it's important, because if people do want to find you, you know, they gotta be able to find the right place.
Because I usually spell it wrong the first time.
Yeah.
So it's just, I'm just really happy right now. And then I'm also doing the same thing for my Instagram, because I'm taking accountability on myself to force myself to get better what I want to do, because it's one of those things that I think people lack on. They say they want to do this and they want to get better at this. So they want to be the top dog. They want to, you know, own their own business. They want to be a manager at this place and so on and so forth. And they're talk, but little do. And this is putting me on myself, putting myself on the spot that if I'm going to try to make it and do what I want to do as an upholstery and, you know, furniture design, if I want to make pieces of furniture that people are going to want to buy, then I have to, right now, I have to start setting the building blocks for that. So one of the things I did was I created an Instagram for myself, and I had a couple corny names for it. I was like, Edwin Serrato Furniture Designer. But my girlfriend was like, maybe you should try to find a cooler name for that. So I landed with Sir Fern, which is my last name, Serrata, and then furniture, and then I just condensed those two, Sir Fern. So yeah, so that's my Instagram at Sir Fern, and then on my page, I do time-lapse videos on some of the drawings that I do, and I just and this is another thing about accountability, I just made a big investment in myself to get a whole bunch of upholstering tools so I can start reupholstering at home, because I only get to go to my internship about once or twice a week. And as nice as they are for providing the tools and, you know, the product for me to work on, it's only once and twice that I get to do it a week. So with now this bringing, you know, bringing the craft home with me, I can continue on and continue working on upholstery while, you know, on my free time, which I actually have a lot of time of. So, yeah. So it's just really impressive. This is the beginning. This is where it starts.
I'm going to say that Eddie has really inspired me as a figure for like getting work done. I've always been a chronic procrastinator, and it's probably one of my most like the things I'm most ashamed of, as it were, like one of my weaknesses, in some not so aggressive terminology, one of the like my weaknesses is I'm a terrible procrastinator. I'm so efficient at procrastinating. That's the thing, is it's like if I took half the energy I put towards procrastinating or like finding reasons to procrastinate, I could have already gotten so much more done. But you know, it's also dwelling on the past is not going to help me get anything done in the future. So I've started to try to exercise more accountable behaviors, and I'm right now looking at Eddie's very intricately designed whiteboards, where he has everything planned out from his budget to his Instagram postings and when he does not go to the gym. And whereas I might not put so much of that stuff on there because I might get there.
My bank account information, if anybody wants to steal it.
So the account number is, get your pens and pencils, paper, 00. Okay, cool. Anyways, I had to cut for time. But next week on the pod, I will have a picture of a whiteboard sketched out my way, however I need to organize it, with the tasks that I'm moving forward with, which we'll talk about at the butt end of the, I guess, towards the end of the pod, about what we're working on now and where we hope to see ourselves in the future. But I'm making that a promise on record, literally on record, with all 48,000, what is it? Fuck, I forgot.
Oh, 48,000 hertz?
No, that's not what it is. Not 48,000. I just learned about this. A sample rate of 48,000, which means that there's 48,000 bits of information in each wave. The bit depth. I don't know. I literally just learned this in class and I forgot it immediately. I should take better notes. Yeah. But anyways, I'm on record now saying that I will have a sketched out whiteboard of planning for myself, because Eddie asked me if I had a planner. I do not have a planner. I've tried so many different ways and so many different times to do planning, but it's ultimately the follow-through. Yeah. And on the point of accountability, me being put on record and saying it to Eddie's face right now and saying that I'm going to have this, I have someone else, at least for the moment, while I'm still fucking weak in will, I have someone who's going to hold me accountable. So
you also said in front of Clover, my dog.
That's true.
Yeah, so if you lie to me, you lie to Clover. Yeah. You don't lie to two people.
And species. She blinked awake. I was like, she might be asleep. That might be a loophole. Fucking no witnesses here. If I can destroy the SD card, snap it over my knee. But yeah, I've always had a like really bad neurosis with like everything. But I guess that's kind of the stereotype of a writer. It's the stereotype of any creative. It's like, you know, they couldn't be bothered to do something because they are overthinking everything. But, you know, ultimately, I'm not a creator if I don't create something.
Yeah.
So I'm working on a script now. I will have that script. It's a script for a short, a horror short, pseudo autobiographical short, as it were, but I will have that script done by next pod as well, so I'll have a organized sheet.
You should just have it. So for me, I got this whiteboard because I am also a procrastinator by heart, and it sucks because it really fucked me up in school too, where I would be finishing projects at the very end. And trust me when I say this, when people think that if you think you make good projects when you procrastinate, you should see when you actually plan and do everything out on a timely basis, your work will be much, much better.
I got a paper done. I had a paper due for today, I guess. And I did it right when it was assigned. And I can't tell you when I sent that assignment 5 days in advance, whatever, how great that actually felt. because you never know what's going to go wrong, when especially when you're making a film, or I imagine when you're doing furniture, like, you get to a point and you realize you don't have enough materials, or you get to a point and you realize you don't have the right tool, and then you get to that point and you've given yourself only 3 days to do it or whatever, or, you know,
yeah.
however the shortened version of that is, and then you didn't account for mistakes to happen, which mm-hmm. will always arise, mm-hmm. and then you fuck yourself over because now you have to miss a deadline.
Yeah.
And now you lose the trust of a client, or you know...
Your product is not as good as it should be.
And it reflects on you as an untrustworthy person.
Exactly. And so that's why I got this whiteboard, is because, you know, I see other people, and again, listen to a lot of other podcasts and what they do for success. And a common theme is I have a planner, I have a calendar, I have some form of writing what has to be done or what I need to do, and then checking it off later. Because I'll tell you, when I write something that I have to do on here and then I get to cross it off, it feels really good to do that. And I date mark everything, so I know how long ago that I wrote it and what day it is, and like to show myself was like, this is what happens when you're not doing something. Yeah. It's already, you're 10 days deep and you haven't even like touched it.
I was gonna say you should steal some date dots.
Yeah.
I know, right? Like, this is a Monday task, this is a Wednesday task.
Yeah.
And
what's fun about the whiteboard too is that I keep messing around with the format of it too. Mm. So like, I'm kind of testing myself, was like figuring myself out. I was like, okay, well, I wrote something down this way, didn't really come to it, like, I didn't act on it because I think writing it this way wasn't the right way, so like, let me write it this way now. Okay, well, this one has a better result, so I think I'll stick with this or tweak this a little bit more to the when, you know, on my whiteboard planner where it's being used in a more efficient way. So that I think that's something that anybody should buy a whiteboard.
I already made the promise on record I'm gonna have my first draft, or I'm gonna have a finished, slightly polished draft of my script done, and then, because I made a promise to an actor who I work with at the movie theater, so I guess I work at a particular coffee shop with Eddie, but I also work at a movie theater that's across the street from that particular coffee shop in Boston, and I work with an actor, and he acted in another production that I did for a 48-hour film festival, or film race, as they called it, which just exemplifies how much of a procrastinator I am, that 48, the idea of making a movie from absolute nothingness to completion in 48 hours excited me. It's like, oh, that's my normal operating time. Like, I can do this. You know, and it's exciting to have those deadlines, so I should just play to my strengths. Like, Gary Vee always talks about over-indexing. You know, I particularly like the fire under my butt in the short term. So if I can break things up into smaller chunks and light the fire under my butt and say, like, you have 3 days to complete the outline, you have this many time, you have this much time to do this, like, I can get myself there in steps, as opposed to saying, like, okay, you have 2 months to make a movie. If I am left to my own devices, I'll just wait until the last week, and then maybe out of that last week I'll wait until like the last weekend. But I had 2 months, and so it's like, why didn't I use the 2 months? Because I didn't give myself small enough chunks of deadlines, and I don't see myself ever being able to stretch my foresight and like planning skills out to be months and months at a time. So I just got to work in those increments and give myself some micro goals so that I can like achieve the larger goal without thinking about the larger goal, because it's going to be overwhelming and I'm just going to be like, oh, I'll just wait till the last second.
Yeah.
So I guess on the point of accountability, like, I'm 21 now. I guess I should have given that for perspective.
Yeah, I'm 24.
Geez, you're that old? I'm just kidding.
Wow.
Fucking old ass move. No, but I'm 21 years old. I'm coming up on my last semester of school ever. I don't foresee myself pursuing grad school. So this is, you know, one of the most liminal stages for myself. You know, high school, you go to college. In college, you're under the authority of the school, and you're still watched out for by the school, and people care about how you're doing in school. Then once I'm out of school, it's like into the real world. And I'm sure somebody who's like 50 would be like, oh, you don't understand true independence until you have your own kids and your house and you gotta take care of it. It's like, yeah. But for me now, from the life that I've lived, like, this is very much independent. So I gotta figure my stuff out, because no one else is going to make my success.
Yeah.
So I just...
That's definitely true.
If I can't be accountable to myself, then no one else can expect me to be accountable.
And that's something that I feel is in your personal life and in your work life as well. Because in my personal life now, I'm starting to get the notion of like how to structure my personal life where I'm more sustainable. So like a simple one is finances. And finally, you know, in my early 20s, I've gotten credit cards. I spend wildly on things that I don't need. And I'm feeling the regrets of it now. And now, you know, I'm actually pretty happy and excited when I say this, but I'm really happy that I'm paying off my credit cards, right? I mean, I think anybody would be happy to pay off their credit card bills. But for me, it's like a weird, twisted, like, happiness. Like, I'm really happy when I put in my, like, pay my bank, my Discover card, you know, monthly payment.
Can you read off those 16 digits?
Yeah, exactly. So
don't forget the CVC. How else are people, our listeners, supposed to buy flat screens for themselves?
but yeah, it just I feel happy because I know I'm reaching to a goal, which is, you know, obviously have a zero balance on my credit card. And also my Discover card is the last credit card that I have to pay off in the series of credit cards that I've accumulated over my early 20s and accumulated debt on that honestly was very unintentionally unneeded to do for myself. But it's one of those things, and like once that's done, like what's the next financial venture am I taking? Making a savings account. Well, I have one. It's just I've never sustainably like held.
And your retirement account. Let's not forget that.
I know, right?
You know, you start
401k.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean with a certain mobile app that you're using to store money for retirement, which is like a very. Do you have a 401k too?
No, I don't.
Okay, but still, like you're actively creating a retirement plan and you're putting money into it. So
yeah, so I'm just like, and you know, this is the beginning. Just I'm making my foundation as I'll state it right now. I'm making the foundation of my life and my career, you know, personally and externally, where. In a year from now, which I would like us to revisit, in a year from now to see where we are. Obviously, we're not going to make it. I'm not expecting me or you to have made it next year.
Yeah.
But we'll definitely be breaking a lot of ground.
Let's put a note on your, put a note on your phone to start listening to the podcast from the jump.
Yeah.
Like from the beginning, this time next year. So today is the,
Today is the 13th of October.
Oh, it's Spooktober. It's 13th of October, the spookiest day of the year. Even though it's not Friday, we missed it by a day. Right? That would have been amazing. Missed it by a day, but.
Happens once in a thousand years, man.
13th of October. Oh, for real?
No,
I'm kidding. Okay, I was going to believe you, and I went to math in science school. So 13th of October, we'll revisit, we'll start listening to the podcast week by week again, and kind of living our life on a foil, a parallel universe, if you will. Like, you know, Eddie and Gage living out themselves from 2018, the end of 2018, but then next year will be at the end of 2019. And I intend on living in Boston starting in December and starting my actual independent adult life of like having a home, for me, it's having a room and then living there and working. I hope to get an internship at the end of December. I work at my two jobs now to support myself and kind of building up some capital. So I fully intend to just be in the city, work as much as possible when I graduate, and just stay in the city and do whatever I can so that I can have some career in film. Like, I'm just excited. I get so excited when I get on set. You know, I imagine just like you, when you like sit in front of a piece, you know, and that you're going to start working on, you start to do the analysis in your head, and you start to do like the puzzle of like, all right, what tacks do they have on this, and what kind of wood are they using? What kind of like cushioning are they using? Are there spring placements where I'm going to put the spring? Like, for me, being on set and seeing that camera and seeing the lights and like knowing that, you know, it's all about to go down and people have to be in the right place at the right time, and it's thrilling. And if I can just do that for as long as I can, then I'll be stoked. I'll be happy. And of course, in both of our situations, it's going to be stressful and really annoying at times.
Yeah.
But ultimately, that's what keeps you there, because you know, it's this thing that you absolutely fucking love.
Yeah, because in the sense of a podcast and in a sense of what we want to do in our career, you know, we're just starting out, so
yeah,
like what gives anybody?
It's probably not gonna help much.
These are
great recorders. Humble brag. This is a great H4N Pro. We're using the field mic right now. For all those listeners, for the talking about progress, just small tangent. I am relishing the day that we will have individual podcast microphones and we're recording in a less echoey space with less squeaky chairs where the mics are right up to our face and you're hearing just our voice and not all these like cracking and snapping and like drinking water in the background. But until those days, let's live in the moment. These are the good old days when we had a recorder and one pair of headphones on a storage crypto in the middle of your room.
But it's like, you know, we're just starting out and, you know, who are we? It's like people who are looking out and we're trying to get in.
Yeah.
Is like, who are we to like try to do this?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And
more than likely, just statistically, we're going to fail.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to beat the odds.
Exactly. But that's the beauty of it too, is like, you know, If we're going to fail, you know, at least let's learn something from it, right?
For sure. Yeah. And I don't intend to shake it. I feel like a pit bull with a fucking bite on someone's leg right now. Like, I love pit bulls to death, but they're also engineered to be fucking killers. So if we're going to be frank with their genetics, like, I feel like a pit bull, and for film and television, that's like, I got into my jaws, and no matter what, I'm not going to let it go. If that means, like, working on a kid's public access television show for 5 years as, like, a grip, you know, so be it. I love being on set.
Yeah.
I want to produce. I love the whole process of it. And I'll probably get into that later on, like where I kind of found that.
And I'm pretty sure with film as the same for interior design. So for you to have a good reputation in the field of design is pretty hard because all eyes are on you, and like word of mouth and like how information travels in that community is very fast and very opinionated. So, and I can imagine that's the same thing, you know, in the film industry.
Yeah, just look at any headline about any actor ever and see how quickly that firestorm turns into like an absolute hurricane.
Yeah, so when you come in to that kind of field, you are literally nothing, and you really gonna have to work on it really hard just to make a small name for yourself, just to be noticed. And that's the thing about accountability. Like, you really have to go into yourself and audit yourself and be like, okay, what am I doing?
Just checking
the battery. Yeah. What am I doing? You know, am I doing the right thing? Am I being true to myself? And what are the next step that I have to take so I can continue to progress? And it's just, and that's something that I've been starting to look on at work, because, you know, I know I'm not perfect at work, and I definitely want to start taking more charge in how am I affecting my team, you know, as just as a barista, than being like, yeah, I do work hard, but what are ways that I can work better rather than harder? Because you can work as hard as you want until you're blue in the face, but, you know, you can just be working towards nothing. And I think that's something I definitely have to start working on at work, is that, yes, I do work hard, or I don't want to, like, you know, sound like I'm bragging or being bombastic, but, you know, if I feel like I'm working hard, but to somebody else, I'm not working hard, then there's some merit on both those cases. I could be doing something that's a useless task, that's not going to benefit anybody, but to me, I'm, you know, working on this one thing that nobody ever wants to work on, and if I don't work on it, nobody works on it.
I feel that.
So, you know, there's a balance to it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think we should start transitioning. I think we're at 57 minutes now. We might get a tight hour, tight little hour 15.
Yeah.
Let's start to shift towards what we're working on now. Because if this, in the purpose of this, and for the transparency, we already stated up top, this is to document our progress in our fields, and hoping to keep you along for the ride and have someone to listen in, and for ourselves, selfishly, to have like an archive to go back on and be like, oh, dude, remember?
Yeah.
Remember when I wanted to do movies when I wasn't designing rockets that would launch us into fucking Pluto? Like, I'm expecting my life to take a hard turn at any given point. I don't know. Anyways, let's turn into like what we're working on now. I'll start with you, because I already touched on mine a little bit.
So what I'm currently working on, so like I said, I have, oops, let me back a little bit.
You're not peeking yet, but okay. You're good for a little bit.
Yeah. What I'm working on right now is, I'm always constantly working on my Instagram and then my internship's Instagram, at Sarah Fern, at McLaughlin Upholstery, definitely look, give us a follow if you'd like. But yeah, I'm always posting up new ideas that I have for furniture designs that I'm working on. And I'm just definitely just trying to progress and improve how I portray my ideas to, to the mass. And then right now, that's in conjunction with my Instagram. I'll be posting more content on my personal upholstery project that I'm working on, which is, I don't even know, but it's really interesting. It's just a regular office chair, but it's made out of this really dense wood because it's just heavy. It's a heavy piece of furniture, and that's a project I'm really excited to be on, working on myself. And then this piece, which is the first piece I've independently worked on, is just a great stepping stone to continue on, because I'll be learning a lot about myself and what I can do, and this piece will be something that will be like a kind of a capstone of where I'll go from here on out. So yeah,
that's tight.
Yeah, fucking, I'm ready for this grind, dude.
For myself, I, like I said, I will have the polished, slightly polished, let's not hedge it, polished first version of my script for a short that I'm writing independent of any class or club or anything like that. It's called Hunger. It's slated to be like a 15-minute short about a young man whose reckless and impulsive behavior leads him to some pretty interesting consequences when he goes on a Tinder date with a 1,000-year-old witch and gets a lesson learned for his reckless behavior. Let's just say that. I hope to have that finished. Well, I will have that by the obviously I might have peaked it by clapping. By the next time we're recording this podcast, no, next week, Saturday, I will have the polished first version. And my overarching goal, not to get ahead of myself, but my overarching goal is to have it done by Halloween 2018. Because I fucking love horror, and it's always wanted to make a horror movie or a thriller. It seems like it's more to be like a thriller. But I'm also such a new writer. Like, I'm really proud of you, and I see like the work that you're doing and how much you know what you have to do, and then how much like you're like, oh, I got the wrong like thing to remove the tax, and I have to go back and get another tax.
I was so pissed, man. Yeah. I was like, are you serious? I was so pissed when I found that out.
So I can't wait to look back and see how shitty of a writer I am, because I want to be improving so much. I got a really harsh grade on the first script for a 10-minute short I was doing in class, and that honestly like made me like smile a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if we're gonna be meta here for a second, the feedback that we've gotten, and we'll segue into this last segment of today's episode, the feedback that we've gotten about the first couple of episodes of the podcast, what we'll call the pilots of the podcast, has kind of emboldened us to structure, not just fuck around with a microphone in a room, like,
yep,
let's actually provide something, or try to at least, and put some structure on this so that people can follow it and aren't just like listening to two boys on a podcast.
So expect that. I was actually very excited when I heard some of our feedback, even though it was like very indirect and people just chopped it up to being like, yeah, you guys suck. I was smiling when somebody told me that. And they were almost a little taken aback. It was like, yeah? I was like, yeah. Like, I'm glad that we suck.
So we're segueing now into the final segment of today's show, which is feedback, comments, and future platforms. By the time you're hearing this, we should have a Facebook page created.
Yep. This would be good practice for me for continuing on social media.
Facebook page, a landing page, as it were, because I have an Android device. Eddie has a Apple device. I have a PC. He has a Mac. We're like, there's like that Justin Long commercial from like the mid 2000s. Like, I'm a PC. I'm a Mac. And it's like that square ass white dude with a gray suit. But I resent that commercial, and I think PCs are awesome. My point is that we are on different platforms. Eddie listens on iTunes. I listen on Spreaker and Spotify. So we release our episodes through Anchor, which is a podcasting app, but Anchor also releases over time the episode on different platforms. They release it on iTunes,
Spotify.
I don't know if they do Spreaker, but I will have a complete list. We'll have a complete list on the Facebook page with the links. However you listen to your podcasts, we want to be able as accessible as possible. And we will use that as like our landing page where you can write us in, write us a private message, post something. We'll figure out the details there. And more to come. But we need to, you know, we're going to start somewhere.
Actually, no, I know the exact details. So,
okay, perfect.
If you guys want to contact us, you can contact me on my Instagram at Sir Fern. DM me
about that podcast. Folks. Spell that, Sir Fern.
Sir Fern at SERFURN. Sir Fern.
Got it.
That's my main Instagram. I'm literally on it every day. You can DM me. More than happy to. When this podcast is up, we'll have a Facebook page called Two Boys in a Podcast. Follow us on there. We'll have links to all of our episodes and as they get released from Anchor. But they will be up by when you check on it. So that's our Facebook page, Two Boys in a Podcast. And definitely, you know, follow me and DM me on my Instagram at SirFern. And seriously, we really do want feedback and comments because there's no way this show can grow on just on a basic level of its listener base. And then as me and Gage as hosts of this show without your guys' feedback and comments.
Yeah. And I guess we should have...
Yeah,
no. We should have put this at the top of the episode, but we also aren't just interested in furniture and film. That's our primary focus. That's our career. But if you want to hit us up about One Piece, if you want to hit us for Eddie, if you want to hit us up about the show Lost by J.J. Abrams, I will gush for hours and hours. We'll go into that in the next episode. Yeah. But we're going to want to get some reach because we spent this episode dedicated to talking about ourselves, our careers, where we're going. But that will run in the background of almost all these podcasts, the updates, where we are in our lives. But it's going to be, we contain multitudes.
Yeah.
Don't we, Eddie? And we'll be talking about other stuff, dogs, headphones, camera gear, even though it has to do with film, but like furniture, like all the minutia that you love and give a shit about and your friends don't want to hear about anymore. You're interested in it. Come to us. We got you covered on all things random as shit.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Alrighty.
Nice.
I think we're good.
Yeah.
Is that a wrap?
Yeah. This is Eddie signing off.
This is Gage signing off on our first, we'll call it first asterisk episode.
Yeah.
Bye, guys.
See you guys.